From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 24th day of September 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. Check out the weather with Don Day. Hear a portion of this morning's speech to the UN by the President of the United States. Talk about the trade dispute with China. And we'll go in-depth on ethanol. That with Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University. Right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices for the day. December corn, a penny and a half higher at $3.74 3/4. March at $3.85 1/2, up 1 1/4. And July at $3.98 1/4 cent higher. November beans, a penny and 3/4 higher at $8.94 1/4. January, $9.07 3/4, up 1 3/4. And July at $9.36 1/2, a penny and a half higher. Bean oil up a penny. Bean meal, 90 cents higher. Wheat futures down a penny and a quarter at $4.81 3/4 in the December. That's for the soft red. July there at $4.98 1/4 unchanged. And live cattle futures finished 27.5 cents higher in the lead October at $102.12 1/2. Feeders 35 cents lower at $141.25. And lean hogs a buck and a nickel higher at $62 even. Energies are trading crude oil down $1.38. Ethanol about unchanged. Heating oil or diesel fuel 3 cents lower for the day. And gasoline also off 3 cents on the wholesale price. Natural gas about 2 7/10 cents lower. And the Dow is around 183 points lower at this hour. Let's turn our attention to the market directly. We're joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, great to be here, Todd.
So what do you make of the marketplace today, and tell me about harvest, if any, activity in your area?
Well, you know, the market, we did see a little strength come back in when we heard that there was some more Chinese business in the beans, of course, and that there was Mexico business in the corn. That was good. A little bit of talk out in week three of possibly some frost up in the northwest that didn't hurt anything along the way, and some technical signals that kept the market strong that way. Last night, I got a text from one of my customers, and he said, 90 acres, 245 at 22% moisture. And then I said, sounds great. And then he says, went to Sun's Field down the road, 145. So, 100 bushels difference between them, planted one day apart, same way, same fertilizer programs and everything. So that, he said, variability this year is going to be great. And I think that that's one thing that we're going to see a lot of. So.
Yeah, a lot of variability, and it'll just depend on whether we vary more on the top end or the bottom end, I suppose, to get us a final number when we get to the October and November report. Stocks reports due out Friday. Any early indications of what it might show? This is the final one of the year.
You know, I think that the stock report is going to probably show some fairly big numbers. I think that, we've showed them in the last few reports in our carry-in and everything like that. So we've got a real good indication that they're going to hang in there pretty much as some big carry-in numbers like that. And back to the other things, the beans, we've heard anyway from 42 to 74 bushel beans over here, a lot of them in the 50 to 60 area for the early and timely planted beans. Now, this is the first go-round when they were planting corn and beans, at least before the 10th of May that way, Todd. So it's other indications. The beans left in the field over here are very, very short. They are podded close together, but we don't know how they're going to come out.
Very shortly, anything on yesterday's weekly crop progress report of note? 30 seconds.
Yeah, Illinois 4% better, Minnesota 3% better, and that's why corn was under a little bit of stress this morning. But, we did have a major advisory firm that bought back most of his hedges in the corn today on the close when it closed above 375. So that, and like I say, but the crop ratings, we start a little bit behind on, maturity, but the ratings looked real good.
Hey, thanks so much. That's Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
In today's agricultural news, we'll talk about just one topic, trade and China. It's been an interesting few days. Last week, a trade delegation from China was in Washington, D.C. They talked with their U.S. counterparts, and then part of that delegation was scheduled to make farm visits in Nebraska and Montana. On Friday, the Chinese delegation announced it would not be making those particular visits, and traders in Chicago pushed the price of soybeans lower. On Monday morning, some 600,000 tons of new sales to China were announced, and the market reversed and moved higher. On that same day, Steven Mnuchin, who is the Secretary Treasurer for the United States, helped President Donald Trump answer a question as it was related to the Friday cancellation of the farm visits by China, and in it, he confirmed that it was the United States that had canceled those particular visits.
Well, they're starting to buy a lot of our ag product, but Steve, could you...
That was actually at our request. They delayed that. So we didn't want there to be any confusion. They have started buying agriculture. They're going to reschedule that in a different time. The timing didn't work. But that was purely our request.
Why was that our request, just out of curiosity?
We didn't want confusion around the trade.
Yeah, but I want them to buy farm products.
There was no confusion. We want them to buy agriculture. They've committed to buy agriculture, and they're doing
they've
that.
They've committed to buy a lot of agriculture, and they're going to start, and they've started. And we should get them over there as soon as possible so they can start buying. But they have already started buying, as you know, and as you've heard, a lot of product from our farmers, our ranchers. Okay? Thank you very much.
There are a couple of items to keep track of there. The president asked his secretary treasurer why the United States had asked the Chinese delegation not to visit farms in Montana and Nebraska. And then he went on to say that the Chinese would be buying agricultural products in a big way. That was yesterday. Today, however, when President Trump addressed the United Nations, he took a completely different tact with China, and one that seemed to hold a veiled military threat. Here's a lengthy excerpt from the speech.
The American people are absolutely committed to restoring balance to our relationship with China. Hopefully, we can reach an agreement that will be beneficial for both countries. But as I have made very clear, I will not accept a bad deal for the American people. As we endeavor to stabilize our relationship, we're also carefully monitoring the situation in Hong Kong. The world fully expects that the Chinese government will honor its binding treaty made with the British and registered with the United Nations, in which China commits to protect Hong Kong's freedom, legal system, and democratic ways of life. How China chooses to handle the situation will say a great deal about its role in the world in the future. We are all counting on President Xi as a great leader. The United States does not seek conflict with any other nation. We desire peace, cooperation, and mutual gain with all. But I will never fail to defend America's interests.
That was an excerpt from the speech that President Donald Trump made to the United Nations earlier today, in which he referenced globalism, trade, China, and the military might of the United States. It's time to check the weather on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here from Day Weather. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's take a look at the Corn Belt. Tell me about the rainfall we've had, what you expect over the next week, and then how you see October unfolding.
Well, I tell you, it's going to be very interesting as we look at October. There's going to be a month of contrast coming up next month. We did see a pretty good frontal system come through here over the past weekend, bringing some showers and thunderstorms. And we're going to start off this week and go into the end of the week with really not a lot going on. There'll be a couple of systems moving through the northern plains, but precipitation is going to be pretty much on the spotty side. The real story is going to be at the end of this month and into early October is the big difference between the eastern half of the country and the western half of the country. We're going to have a big high, bring a lot of heat, abnormally hot weather to the central, southern and eastern areas of the United States, could have some record heat as we look into early October. And that would include some areas of the eastern and southern areas of the Corn Belt, even the central Corn Belt. On the flip side, we're going to see a cold, wet pattern move into the western United States by late this weekend and early next week. Some of the first freezing temperatures of the season for the northern plains and the northern Rockies will move in with some mountain snow. And so while the eastern side of the country will be above normal, the western side of the country will be below normal. In between is where all the busy weather is going to be, and that'll be in the western areas of the United States and into the central plains.
What do you mean by busy?
Yeah, well, this could early October could see portions of the west getting snow and portions of the southeast United States setting record heat temperatures. So it is going to be a big contrast. And eventually what will happen is the cold air will win out and some cooler weather will move across the nation. And that'll be the story, I think, when we talk next week.
You said October should be interesting. What do you see?
Well, I do see it starting off with this big contrast, but I also see it as a month to where it is probably still going to be warm and dry in the far east and southeastern United States. It is going to extend the growing season, I think, in some areas of the eastern Corn Belt and delay any type of freeze, at least early on in the eastern area.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. On Tuesdays, we always take a look at the agricultural energy sector. Dan O'Brien now joins us from Kansas State Extension. Thank you so much, Dan, for being here today. Let's start with kind of a bottom line. You sent me a slide set for ethanol. Is it profitable or not profitable? We've been shutting down plants big time.
Well, that would be consistent with the profitability or lack thereof that we've been seeing. We have for September estimates of September price for ethanol about $1.30. Take into account that distillers grains prices have not been trending up. Combine that with a total cost of $1.48 a gallon. So if you're selling ethanol for $1.30 and your cost is $1.48, you're losing, by our estimate, about 18 cents a gallon. Of course, in that you've got some well-established plants that aren't having to put as much towards debt, debt payment, and versus new plants that are, and people are different. These plants are in different places and all this on a cash basis. But overall, good representative plant, they've continued losing money now for 10 plus months in a row. So that's they're eating into equity by our standards. Biodiesel selling price in September for the first 3 weeks, about 281.5. The biodiesel prices cost about 285. So, you're losing four or five, 10 cents a gallon, just depending how you calculate things. So, where they're at in the cost structure. So not tremendous times of profitability. And I think as you and I have talked at different times, we're seeing plant closures and at least, or delays thereabouts and just challenging times in that industry.
How did we get to this point? What is it on either the supply or demand side that has put us ethanol in this situation?
Well, when you look at the selling price, the trend of it, the trend of ethanol selling prices has basically been to see ethanol trending down this year since a high in July through August through September, up just a little bit here in the last week, but that trend would have to improve pretty sharply. Now corn prices had been coming down some, but still they had a high enough level coming following our spring planting delays that you still have higher prices. And what we're seeing, I think, and you and I have talked about this in the past also, that we're seeing a disconnect between the futures and the actual cash price having to be paid at ethanol plants to gather in supplies. And you really see it in the eastern Corn Belt. Top end bids in Ohio and Indiana, 55, 60 over, Illinois, 15 over, Iowa 11 or 20 over the DEES contract, Kansas 25 over. So tighter supplies apparently. And when the cost of the main input is tight enough that they have to pay positive basis for it, and you have just so-so selling prices, well, that's a recipe for 10 to 20 cents per gallon losses. I would say when you look at the trends in ethanol stocks, weekly stocks figures in the 2018-19 marketing year are the highest they have ever been. So we've had cheap, relatively cheap input supplies for several years in a row. And you can see, although there's seasonality to it, you can see the upward trend. Well, now it seems that we've got at a tipping point to where we have enough stocks that we're carrying forward that, you know, absent a real crunch in supplies, and that would involve RIN usage and all of that. But absent that, we just have, we've got about 20% more ending stocks on a weekly basis, weekly stocks of ethanol right now than we did two or three market years ago. And on the margin, that just leads us to some percentage lower ethanol prices instead of $1.40, $1.50. Ethanol prices were at $1.20, $1.30, and gosh, that makes all the difference when you're pushing gallons out of an ethanol plant and operating on a margin like those places do.
So do you know, is it usage has come down? Is it that simply supply was building as corn was cheap and ethanol plants were running well, and they still are producing a lot of ethanol, and that's going into the supply? I'm trying to figure out why the stocks have built.
I think that, I think you build stocks one day at a time, and for several years, one day at a time, on a one day at a time basis, we had relatively low priced corn, and a decently moving along economy. So I for some set of reasons, and relatively cheap corn being at least one of them, we've built up stocks over the years, and now what's normal is about 10 to 15% higher weekly ethanol stocks than what we had before. There are some issues having to do with export demand and all of that come into play. But I guess on the margin, it's mainly an overproduction issue. We haven't cut back. We haven't cut back production to the degree that we've closed 30% of our plants. Again, we're seeing slowdowns and some closures, but I think it has more to do with a relatively cheap feedstock, and I would say gasoline demand and usage. The last time I looked on the Energy Information Agency website, 143 billion gallons worth of gasoline usage, and that's actually up from where we had been. So relatively strong economy, even though we have a lot of discussion about how it could be weakening here and there, et cetera, but still we're using a lot of gas, and with RFS still holding up for blending, I think we have not seen gasoline demand crater. But we have not seen ethanol production until here just recently slow down either. So tend to think it has as much to do with lower priced corn as anything.
So I have a secondary question on that. I know that when we started the process in the mid 2000s, that it was about 2.4 gallon a bushel, and then 2.6, 2.7, 2.8. Have we just been increasing the capacity within the industry without actually by efficiencies without having to build extra plants? Has that played a role?
I think the numbers that I use in my calculations are 2.85 gallons per bushel, and that was an increase from where we had been before. Tight margin industry, the survivors are highly efficient, so I think that's an economic competition force that's there. I think the story one of the big stories at the plant level is what we're doing with the distillers' grains. It's not directly answering your questions, but we're extracting value out of using more biodiesel production from the gleanings out of what we used to just give away and distillers grain feed. So we're affecting the remaining feed content of what hasn't been extracted out of those distillers grains. So in terms of competitive pressures, there'd be pressure both to get as much efficiency as you can in terms of fuel production from a bushel of grain, and to extract as much value as you can from the distiller's grain side. So without question, economic pressures are driving us towards efficiency. And I would not doubt that you're probably right. If a plant's still working on 2.5 bushels in their area and pricing corn purchases off of that, and a competitor down the road, a newer plant or maybe an older one, whatever, but it's operating more efficiently, it's a 2.85, well, you're not going to survive very well. So you've asked me a question. I've talked around in circles on it, Todd.
But I get it. So there just are a lot of things at work here. I mean, we have the SREs, but we also have an industry that has been operating at capacity, but operating above capacity, relatively speaking, because they've found efficiencies both in fuel production and ways to use the byproducts more effectively. And supply's been ample, so all kinds of things coming to fruition in the ethanol industry. And as we've already been told by Poet, they're going to cut back by some 130 billion bushels this year. So that's just, or 130 million bushels this year. That's just a lot of bushels.
How does this differ, what we see happening in ethanol, how does this differ from what you see in any industry that's becoming mature? To where demand expansion, things may happen. We may go to E15, full-scale adoption. There may be other things that happen, but we've reached a place to where we're pretty stable in our usage, in our production. So we turn to increased efficiency competition with a generally a commodity. It's hard to distinguish ethanol from one plant from another. So we compete doggedly on efficiency factors to be lower cost than the next person, because we can't. It's hard to distinguish, other than geographically, perhaps, what ethanol is from one plant to another. So what this looks like to me is at least temporarily an efficient operation, very competitive conditions in a somewhat mature industry. It's the throes of a tighter time on a very mature industry that's not seeing demand grow a lot more yet. So I think that's where we're at in this situation.
Hey, Dan, thank you so very much.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Trucks, the tractors, the wagons will all start to move within the next week or so, maybe 2 weeks out for real movement. But be aware, as you're traveling the back roads of Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, the Dakotas, Indiana, and Ohio, because you'll need to watch out for them, and I know they'll be watching out for you.